was February 2nd, 2006. A lady by the name of Anita Murjani was admitted to the hospital. She was covered with lesions. She had stage 4 lymphoma. Her body would no longer extract the nutrients from the food she ate. Her organs were shutting down. She could no longer walk, and she fell into a coma, and that's why they took her to the hospital. The doctors in the emergency room and the intensive care unit where she was sent gave her no hope. They did not expect her to make it through the night, and she didn't. A few hours later, she had a near-death experience. And I won't get into the near-death experience itself, but what I want you to remember is that she had a transformation in that near-death experience. The way she looked at the world was drastically and forever changed, as happens in so many cases where people have near-death experiences. She later wrote a book, and it was called Dying to Be Me. Powerful, powerful book. And in that book she wrote, "There I was, without my body or any of my physical traits, and yet my pure essence continued to exist. And it was not a reduced element of my whole self. In fact, it felt far greater and more intense and more expansive than my physical being. Magnificent, in fact. I felt eternal, as if I'd always existed and always would, without beginning or end. I was filled with the knowledge that I was simply magnificent." Well, good morning. Thank you all for coming out today. Looks like we may finally get some snow, appropriate for Alaska at the end of November, at least. And thank you, Don, for the special music. I didn't know you could hit those high notes. You hit a couple in there that really, that was magnificent and beautiful, and thank you. I've always had a soft spot for that song, and you did a great job with it. And the rest of the choir, thank you all. That's good to see so many up here. Dan Millman once wrote, "Your expectations shape your reality." Your expectations shape your reality. And do you see, Anita Murjani had changed expectations after her near-death experiences. Today, the three points that I'm going to talk about. One, we are an embodiment of the living God. Number two, when we make our transition, it can be a beautiful, sublime, glorious experience. And number three, let's stop talking about dying as the end. I guess I kind of owe an explanation of why we have jumped from this season of thanksgiving and gratitude, and all of a sudden I go into death and dying. They don't fit together real well. I signed up at the first of the year to follow the national themes, and we kind of get these little themes and the kind of the talking points and what to do with it. And I was trying to be pretty good, but man, we hit October, and you know, that's our PFD month. That is the month where we have our pledge campaign, and it really didn't mesh. So I got off task for the month of October, and then November didn't line up very good either. It's Thanksgiving. That, you know, you got to talk about gratitude. So I've been bad for all this time. And so, and then I get, and the theme was supposed to be, you know, from what we believe in the eternality, the, you know, continuity of the individual soul forever and ever expanding. And I thought, well, that doesn't fit very well. I'm going to be off again. But the more I moved, the more that seemed to make sense. And it all just sort of fell together. So today we're getting a talk on death and dying and what that means. The first point, we are an embodiment of the living God. There are several stories in the Bible that are repeated in, well, first of all, Mark was written first, and then by Luke and Matthew were about the same time, and then a few that were repeated in John. The reason I choose Mark, because his stories are common to all of them, is that Mark was the first that was written, and so it was closest to the actual events of the life of Jesus. It only went through a couple of generations of the oral tradition, you know, passed down from father to son orally. So to me, that in itself lends it a little bit more authenticity. And this is a group of stories that occurred when Jesus went into Jerusalem. That's where he came riding in on the donkey, if you remember that. And then he began to teach. He turned over the tables, the money changers and the tables and all that. And he began to teach. There were some priests and scribes who tried to trick Jesus. They tried to get him to say some things that they knew would get him in trouble with somebody. And this first one has nothing to do with death and dying, but it illustrates my point. They asked him, should we pay the required amounts to Caesar, the head tax to Caesar? And Jesus' reply was brilliant. He said, does anybody have a coin? Well, yeah, I got a coin. Whose picture is on the coin? What's Caesar? Then render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Render unto God that which is God. Well, that really stumbled them because they couldn't accuse him of saying, don't pay your taxes. And they couldn't really get him for saying that he had to not obey the Hebrew God. So I wonder if he might have had a future in politics in America. But he, you know, but what this means, if we take that and put it in modern English, if we put that what it would mean today, and if we put that what we believe in, our philosophy, what we're doing, is what Jesus was saying is we live in a world of effects. We have a world of the temporal. We have, the physical world that we live in, that we have to live in. And we also have some spiritual principles. We have some things that we know to be true, that are spiritual in nature. So we have two things going on. One is a secular, very secular world that we live in, and yes, we have to live in that world. And at the same time, there are spiritual truths that we know to be true, and we can embrace those and know that truth. He was brilliant. And we can say the same thing here today. We live in a secular world. We live in a world of effects. We do not deny effects. We do not deny that people are sick. We don't deny that people are poor, that they don't have enough to eat. We don't deny any of those kinds of things. But what we do know is that we live in an abundant universe. And we know that behind all the appearance of disease, there is a pattern of perfection that is perfect. And we can embody that and we do it just like Anita did. That we can experience the remission of cancers. We can experience all of the things because we can know that on a spiritual plane. What Jesus replied when he was asked about the next question that they asked was another trick question to try to get him. And Jesus had taught the concept of resurrection, that we could be resurrected, we could be reborn. And they thought, oh, we've got him here. So they came up with this scenario of a guy who marries a woman and he dies before she can conceive of a son. Under Hebrew law at the time, if that were to happen, his brother were to marry her so that she could conceive of a son. And so the brother was to marry this woman, but he died before she conceived. And then the third brother, they go through seven iterations of this. Seven guys, you know, by then I think I'd be wanting to know, whoa, this isn't going real good. I'm glad I'm not eight. So seven brothers die. So, okay, now Jesus, if you believe in this resurrection, if you believe in this ability to be reborn, and we all come back, which one of the wives is his? He can only have, you know, one, which is the real wife, because he's had seven. And Jesus' reply, once again, was very brilliant. As to whether or not the dead are raised, haven't you read the book of Moses and the passage about the bush? How God spoke to him, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. This is not the God of the dead, only of the living. You're constantly missing the point. And he chastised them. He said, you're constantly missing the point. Our God is not a God of the dead. Our God is a God of the living. Our God is the God of Abraham. It is the God of Isaac. It is the God of Jacob. It is the God of the living. So let's take that down to science of mind. Let's take that down to modern day metaphysics, to modern day way of looking at things. That our God, the thing that we believe in, the divine creative force of the universe, whatever name you ascribe to it, is here for the living. It's not for the deceased. It is not for those who are no longer on this plane. It is for those souls that are here on this plane at this time experiencing this thing we call life. And it is that God to which we refer. It is the God of the living. We are the embodiment of that living God. Also, this is just my own homespun philosophy. It just seems what makes sense to me. And that is, we have this divine creative force, this infinite, infinitely powerful, infinitely knowing, infinitely creative force in the universe. And it has created the entire cosmos. But how is it going to experience it? How is that force going to be a part of that? It only has one way to do that, and that is through you and me and each and every one of us. It is how the divine creative force of the universe can experience all of the joy, can experience a magnificent Alaskan sunrise, and the pain and the sorrow and the loss and the grief. It can only do that through and as each and every one of us, that our lives are the outpicturing. Our lives are that divine creative force, experiencing life, all of life, even the messy parts. The shame and the joy are all part of it. In the late 60s, Two furniture salesmen in London went to the London Zoo, and they discovered a lioness had given birth to a tiny cub and had rejected it. And this little lion cub was going to perish. The zoo people didn't know what to do, and these two furniture salesmen said, we'll take it. And they took this little tiny lion cub home, and they fed it from a bottle, and they nursed this little tiny cub to health. John Rendell and Anthony Burke were these two furniture salesmen. And it was okay when it was 2 pounds. It was okay when it was 20 pounds. It was a little tough when it hit 200. But they treated this cub as if they were members of the same pack, the same pride. It's a pride of lions. They treated it like they were members of the same pride. They didn't try to be its master and to force it into conformity. And this little cub reacted to them as if it were part of their pride, part of their family. Well, it really got to be a problem when the little cub, Christian, they named it, hit 420 pounds. He didn't fit in an apartment in London. He didn't fit in a quaint English park. through a series of coincidences, if you believe in those, it ended up that they befriended two people who had been able to facilitate another lion being released into the wild, into a park in Africa. And they convinced these two furniture salesmen to turn their cub, now fully adult lion, free in this park. And they thought about it, and they thought about it, and they realized that that Christian's instincts, his drive, was to be in the wild on the savanna of Africa. And so it was with a very, very heavy heart that they released Christian. They arranged transportation and went to Africa, and Christian was released into this park where he could learn to adapt to the wild. He could learn to hunt. He could learn to do all of the things that he needed to do. But they still missed him. And a year later, they were able to scrape up the funds and do what they needed to do, and they were able to go to Africa to this wild game park. The manager of this park, the guy that founded the park, advised against it. They said, your lion is now wild. Your lion does not remember you. Your lion is a member of the wild kingdom, and you need to kind of let it go. But they didn't want to do that. And against the wishes of the founder of the park, they went. They called his name, Christian. He stopped in his tracks, and he heard. His ears went up. They called him again, and he turned. And he slowly started to creep up, stalking them. They called again, and he took off after them. They didn't know if he was going to kill them, eviscerate them on the spot, but he jumped up and ran up, put his paws on their shoulder, just as he had when he was that 20-pound cub, and hugged them. We are all of us, expressions of the Most High. We are all creatures of God, even like animals, all that we are. My second point, when we make our transition, it can be a beautiful, sublime, glorious experience. I have never sat with someone as they have made their transition. I have been with people at the end of life, the last few hours, but I have never actually sat there with someone when they died. I know people that have, and they describe it as a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I am reminded of a story. Reverend Karen Fry told me this story. She was younger. She had a cat that she dearly loved. It was 16, and Karen and her cat were inseparable. One day, another one of those coincidences, she decided to work from home. And the cat was fine. Cat was healthy, doing cat things. It was old, but it was okay. And it had been laying in the sun, and she was over working on her laptop, and the cat got up and started to walk toward her, and about halfway toward her, it started to stagger, it started to cough, it obviously couldn't breathe. She was watching the cat die before her very eyes. Now, she had made kind of a pact with the cat. She had said, when it's time for you to go, I want you to die in my lap. So she thought this was it. She went over and she picked up the cat, and she could feel it fighting. She could feel it struggling with life. So she ran to the closest veterinarian with it. They gave it some kind of a shot to stimulate its heart. They did some blood work, and they came to the conclusion that, its organs were all failing. It was, the cat was making its transition. She asked the veterinarian, is my cat suffering? And he said, I don't know, but I cannot imagine that he is not. It must be excruciating agony in this moment. And she said, okay, then do whatever it is you do to euthanize it. So the veterinarian left to go get the shots. And she sat with her cat. And all of a sudden, she felt a glow within the room. She felt a light. She felt a presence. And it grew and it was powerful. It was just, and the cat was filled in the light of this presence. The cat was filled with all of it. And then she heard a noise and the door opened and it was the veterinarian coming back in and the light whoosh, all left. And she was left holding the body of her cat. And her cat had made its transition in her life and she didn't have to put it to sleep. And I think that is how that transition can be. I think that's how that when we go, it can be. It can be a glorious thing. It can be a birth and not necessarily an end. Ernest Holmes in This Thing Called You wrote this in 1948. The soul is the one triumphant, indestructible, and unconquerable thing that you possess. Shot from the invisible into this experience, it constitutes your great reality. But why wait for physical death to enjoy and experience your immortal being? Do not prepare to die, prepare to live. Whether you are 10 years old or 100, there is no death. It is impossible for you to die. Stop trying to die and learn to live. Holmes even went on to write a book called Learn to Live. Third point is let us stop thinking of dying as the end. Sometimes we think of dying as the end or of quitting life or of just getting by with living. But instead, let us learn to enjoy and appreciate our wholeness in the eternal here and the everlasting now. Once again, Ernest Holmes, this is from The Science of Mind. And so we should prepare not to die but to live. The thought of death should slip from our consciousness altogether. And when this great event of the soul takes place, it should be beautiful, sublime, a glorious experience. And as the eagle, freed from the home of heavy flesh, will rise and return to its father's house, naked and unafraid. Our job here is not to die well. Our job is to live well. Our job is to put everything that we have into this life, to stop shooting on ourselves, to stop all of the other self-condemnations, all of the other things that we do to make ourselves less, and instead to embrace this thing called life with all of its messiness, with all of the problems that we all face, and truly embrace life. What Anita Morjani experienced in her near-death experience was a closer connection, not with death, but with life. Anita went on to write, I became aware that we are all connected. This was not only every person and living creature, but the interwoven unification felt as though it were expanding outward to include everything in the universe, every human, animal, plant, insect, mountain, sea, inanimate object, and the entire cosmos. I realized that the entire universe is alive and infused with consciousness, encompassing all of life and nature. Everything belongs to an infinite whole. I was intricately and inseparably enmeshed with all of life. We are all facets of that unity, we are all one, and each of us has an effect on the collective whole. Each one of us has an effect on the collective whole. So as we live and move and have our being and we express that life, everything that we do has an effect on the whole, has an effect on each and every other person. So let's all try and do the best we can with each moment that we have. Each week I give a conclusion or a takeaway, something that I want you to go away with. And today, what I want you to remember is that immortality is not some divine, far-off event. It is an ever-present reality. Don't wait for the experience of immortality to realize your own wholeness and to live from a centered place. The masterpiece of your soul, expressing as you, truly expresses far beyond your physical self. And so with that awareness of our own inherent divinity, of their own presence of God within each of us, the presence of God as each one of us, I would invite my colleagues, the practitioners, to join me in holding our congregation, our city, our country, our planet in love and light. Simply knowing that as divine beings on a divine mission, here to expand and to learn and to grow, that we do so with joy rather than dread, that we do so with purpose. And I speak my word now for each person who is experiencing dis-ease, knowing that beyond any dis-ease, there is perfection at the center of each one of us. That perfection may end up looking like a transition, but we know that that perfection is here and now, and it is to express as each one of us. Perfect. Perfect God, perfect being, perfect human, perfect you, perfect me. And I speak my word for those experiencing the challenges of lack and limitation and money and finances. We just simply know that we live in a universe that is so great, it is so broad, it is so abundantly sourced that we are too abundantly sourced. I know that there is no person who does not have enough to eat, does not have a place to sleep, does not have the power and the presence of God within them at this and in every moment. I speak my word now for those facing addictions, knowing that within each of us is a craving to be more, to be closer to that infinite presence. But we can't get it out of a bottle. We can't get it out of a pill. We can't get it out of a syringe. The only place that that true connection can come is from within our own souls. And so I speak to those who are suffering addiction, knowing that that need can only be satisfied by connection with God. And so I know that that connection is now complete and whole exactly as it is. And finally, I speak my word for those who are suffering from relationship issues. We just simply know that as expressions of the one, our true nature is one of love. And so we just let that love flow. We let that love be. We let that love govern all of our relationships. And so now I just give thanks. I give thanks for my awareness of the power and the presence of God within each and every being, plant, animal, insect, sea, ocean, the entire cosmos. And I release these words to a working of law that always responds yes. All praises be unto the one, and so it is.